Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the Republicans' health care plan wouldn't make America great again. It would make America sick again.
Our Republican colleagues don't quite know what to do. They're like the dog who caught the bus. They can repeal, but they have nothing to put in its place.
President Obama was on Capitol Hill today as Republicans went over strategy. Vice President-elect Mike Pence says Donald Trump's first order of business will be to repeal and replace the health care law.
Replace it with the kind of health care reform that'll lower the cost of health insurance without growing the size of government.
President-elect Trump has provided few specifics about how he would revamp the health care system.
It's because he doesn't know what he's doing. He didn't have a plan before, and he doesn't have a plan now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 285. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. So that was a clip from about 2 years ago when President Dum Dum ascended to the office of High Emperor of the White Supremacist, whatever, fine. And since then, absolutely nothing has happened with healthcare, or certainly nothing good. What we've seen from anything that the president either proposes or implements through executive order is that it has made us worse off, it has made us more broke, it has made us less healthy. And now, when it comes to our taxes, he is straight up picking our pockets. I have long talked about healthcare on this show, despite the fact that I am not all that directly affected by it. I've never lived with the idea that if everything is okay in my world, then everything is okay in the world. For one, I know that if my countrymen aren't doing well, then I'm not doing well. It's just we're all connected. And of course, the other thing is, I'm aging just like everyone else is. Life is terminal. Dying's going around. And the body tends to, well, like anything, it ages and it's not as good as it used to be. And, well, I don't have health issues now, but someday I'm going to. And I'm going to need to be able to lean on the healthcare system. I was talking with a gentleman earlier this week and he said, oh, hey, you know, why don't you know, it's my driving job. Why don't you dump this job and just do your other thing that you're doing? And I said, I can't. I can't because I can't get affordable health insurance. I simply can't. And then I told him that I had just spent 2 days dealing with a health ailment. And on one of those days, I landed in the emergency room. I will get to that in just a moment. And I pointed out to him that my in-laws just qualified for Medicare because they both turned 65. And I actually saw him turn his head down and say this to himself, 65, wow, just got to make it to 65. Think about that. We should be able to enjoy every year of our lives, not simply gunning for the day that we turn 65. And my in-laws kind of did the same thing. Well, when I turn 65, I'm going to get Medicare, you know, and I'll have to deal with this. Nobody likes the healthcare system as it is. But yet we continue to tolerate it, not just tolerate it, we continue to vote for the same politicians that gave us this crappy system to begin with. We support them with money, we support them with votes, and they don't do what they should for us. So, here's what happened. Monday, I woke up at 3 in the morning. I had a little tinge in my side before I went to bed. Woke up at 3 in the morning on Monday, and that tinge had become a full rage fire, just not hot, just like a terrible, terrible pain. Chest pain, but a little lower, right under my rib cage. In the hospital, they called it a chest pain. Okay, crap. Well, first things first, you know, I was not going to work today. And, you know, I woke up my beautiful bride and I said, well, I gotta go somewhere. And, well, what do you think? And I said, well, I'm going to try to get to urgent care. My first thought was not self-preservation. My first thought was, I can't afford to go to the emergency room. Melvin, why? Do you not have health insurance? Of course, I have health insurance. Just said that. I stayed a dumpy-ass job because I need the health insurance. Well, then just go. You're insured. I am and I ain't. I had a health scare about 5 years ago. I had headaches so bad they led to me throwing up. And I went into the emergency room. And they covered a lot of my visit, with the exception that I still ended up with thousands of dollars in bills. At first, it didn't seem so bad, but those bills quickly added up. And for that visit, I ended up with more than $1,000 in bills, and then more than $2,000 or $3,000. I can't even remember now. It was so long ago. But because I had to go to all these follow-up appointments, and they had to keep doing tests. And at that point, they found absolutely nothing. So, no, hon. I don't want to go to the emergency room. I just try to find it. So I pick up my phone, and I start looking up urgent cares. Urgent care doesn't open until 8, and I go, well, ugh, can I just stand here in horrible, horrible, horrible pain for the next 5 hours? And nothing helped it. Not laying down, not standing up, nothing, absolutely nothing helped it. Well, I learned a little thing that helped it a few days later. I'll tell you about that in a second. So there I am scrolling on my phone. Maybe there's one that's open now in the page. Oh, okay, it's not getting better. I have to go now. I said to myself, I can't afford it. But here I go to the freaking emergency room. So I get into the emergency room. It's like 3:30. And there's not very many people in there. Okay. They'll get me right back. I go in, I tell them what's going on. Right away, they sit me down in a wheelchair and they wheel me to the back. They do an EKG. They got to make sure I'm not having a heart attack. Well, it's very, very nice. Hey, look at this. Healthcare system working for me. They do the EKG and they go, man, yeah, you're not even kind of at risk for a heart attack. So, all right, we're going to put you back in the room. Don't worry, there's only two people in front of you. 3.5 hours later, that same nurse that told me there's only two people in front of me came out to me to apologize. See, when I went in, when they thought I was having a heart attack, had I died or had a heart attack, that might have looked bad for them had I sat in their waiting room and had a heart attack. So they just wanted to make sure I wasn't having a heart attack. That way I could sit in their damn room for the next 3.5 hours. And the nurse came out to me and she apologized. She goes, yeah, I'll check this out. It's almost shift change. And shift change, they ain't going to let you sit out here, you know? Oh, what? She's trying to give me the inner workings of the hospital. And it just sounds stupid. I don't understand how these places are even open. How we accept this level of care. About 4 hours, I finally got into the back room where I spent another 4 hours in a room with people going in and out. This test, that test, blood. I started feeling sick and I stayed laying down most of the time. I just, and they do a CAT scan, they do an X-ray, you know, they do all this stuff. Nothing. They can't figure out what it is. It's probably just a stomach pain. What? He says, yeah, I don't think, his words, the doctor, I don't think we missed anything major. But, we're going to give you some acid reducers. We're going to go ahead and send you home. And they did. They gave me acid reducers and they sent me home. Took about two more days. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. By Wednesday, I allowed myself to have a beer. And that really dulled the pain. But peep this. I can't drink beer to make things go away. As of today, Saturday, when I am taping, Saturday the 16th, if I'm not mistaken, the pain has finally completely gone away. I am completely healthy. We never, ever figured out what it was. Just like with my headaches, we never, ever figured out what it was. I'm a strange duck, I suppose. But what should have happened is I should have been able to I feel like my life is threatened. And just go. You know, and it's not as though I don't want to pay for it. I don't mind paying for it. But the way it's set up now, I'm not paying for medical. I'm not paying to keep myself alive. I'm not paying for better health. I'm paying to make some rich guy richer. You know, the head of Blue Cross Blue Shield, my insurance company, that D-bag needs more money. That D-bag needs another mansion. That's where my damn money is going. And I didn't think about my health care. I just thought about the fact that I'm not going to be able to afford this. And I'll be damned if I'm going to... Let's say it had turned out to be serious. And everything I worked for my entire life could just be wiped out in this moment. And for what? Because this rich guy needs to get richer. I just opened my eyes a little bit more to the system that we're dealing with. And I can't imagine had something honestly been wrong. And let's say I got to spend 2 days, 3 days, or even a week in there. I have health insurance, but it's awful. And I don't know what's going to happen. And when these things happen in my life, and I feel like they're relatable, like there's things that I should talk with you about. You know, I didn't need to be directly affected for me to care about the healthcare issue. I did, and I always have. And for those of you that listen to this show, you know that I've been on this tip for a long time. But dealing directly, getting to deal directly or having to deal directly with our medical system opened my eyes a little bit more to the problem. It got a little bit better with President Obama's proposal. But let's be clear. President Obama's proposal came from the Heritage Institute during the 90s. Yeah, they tried to call it socialism and Nazism and all these other things, which what the of course it's not. Made things a little bit better. But when the Republicans came in, because the black guy put it in, we had to get rid of it right away. What are we going to do now? Just like you heard at that clip at the beginning of the show. It's like the dog chasing the car. He catches the car. He doesn't know what to do with the car. And that's what we have now with healthcare. My state, Washington State, and I'm broadcasting out of Southwest Washington. My state is trying to implement a state single-payer system. Vermont tried to do this a little while back with Green Mountain Care, and it didn't work out because they don't have enough people. You got to have enough people under the umbrella for it to work out. And maybe, so just maybe, my state has a little bit of a larger population, so maybe my state is able to make that work. And maybe this happens state by state, like the way it happened in Canada, province by province. I think it's sick. I think it's gross. One of the folks that I seen in the emergency room, her kid had all, I'm not kidding, she walks up to the counter and she goes, this is a goddamn emergency room. She goes, I can't deal with him anymore. She can't deal with him. She's in there with her 15-year-old son. I can't deal with him anymore. He does this, he does that to me, he does this and he does that to me, and I need something. You're in the emergency room. What in the holy hell are you doing? But I get it. I get the frustration. And since we've been losing our social safety net and put in place is this safety net that the Republicans have decided that it's a good idea to put in, which isn't really a net as much as it is a deep, cavernous hole in the ground that you're never, ever, ever going to get out of. But since we've decided to go with their plans and do the thing that they wanted to do, things have really just gotten progressively worse for the rest of us. But peep this, we haven't learned anything. And we don't seem all that particularly interested in making it better. Another thing that happened this week, the president declared a national emergency. Good luck with that. To me, that was coming. And it doesn't really mean anything. The guy is as dumb as the day is long and dishonest to boot. But there was a story about a gentleman in Chicago. And I realized this when I was catching up on the news this morning doing the show planning. The only thing that anybody talked about yesterday was the president's national emergency and how is this going to fare for his 2020 campaign, and this damn thing is going to be going to the courts now, and so on and so forth and such and such. But then I'm reading this morning over at the AP's website, the headline, employee being fired fatally shoots 5 co-workers in Illinois. Quoting here, a 15-year employee being fired from a suburban Chicago manufacturing company started shooting Friday, killing 5 co-workers and wounding 5 police officers before he was killed by the police. Aurora, Illinois Police Chief Kristen Zimmern said 45-year-old Gary Martin was being terminated before he started shooting at the Henry Pratt Company, which makes valves for industrial purposes in the city about 40 miles west of Chicago. She told the news conference that in addition to the 5 employees killed, a 6th worker was taken to the hospital with injuries that were not life-threatening. A 6th police officer suffered a knee injury while officers were searching the building. So this kind of thing. I remember when they moved the sort of the goalpost for what's considered a mass shooting. And they go, you got to kill X amount of people for it to be considered a mass shooting anymore. And so the president is on the microphone screaming about all these brown folks that are invading the country, women with tape over their mouths. And this dude who just got fired decided that the best way to deal with that was to take out his gun, kill five people. And it's not even really news. This is the kind of thing that should be leading. But we go, you know, it's another day in America. Another day in America. Think about that. A dude gets pissed at somebody, shoots, kills five people because he's being fired. And we go, it's just another day in America. So while President Dum Dum was declaring his national emergency because of all the brown folks coming in here, a real national emergency was taking place. The fact that this kind of a shooting can happen and it doesn't even register for us anymore. But now that the president has declared a national emergency over something that was not an emergency, I'll never forget the headline. President Donald Trump declares national emergency, gets on plane to Mar-a-Lago. That's a real thing. Hold up. If it's really a national emergency, where in the hell do you think you're going?
Just think of what a president with different values can present to the American people. You want to talk about a national emergency? Let's talk about today, the one-year anniversary of another manifestation of the epidemic of gun violence in America. That's a national emergency. Why don't you declare that emergency, Mr. President? I wish you would. But a Democratic president can do that. Democratic president can declare emergencies as well. So the precedent that the president is setting here is something that should be met with great unease and dismay by the Republicans. And of course, we will respond accordingly.
Declaring a national emergency is not a new thing, nor is it a controversial thing. We declared one. We've declared one after hurricanes. We declared one after 9/11, and it's never been a point of contention. But this is the first time ever that a president, because he did not get the money that he wanted for a particular project, decided to declare a national emergency because he did not get that money. There is $1.6 billion. So the government didn't shut down again. I kept referring to it as we're in between shutdowns because I really felt that's what it was. The president did not get the $5 billion for his wall that he's long said Mexico's going to pay for. Instead, he got $1.6 billion, and it's not for a dumb 12th century wall. It's for some more guards. It's for some more fencing. It's for some more sensors so that they can, you know, if there's a body in your trunk or there's drugs in the middle of your box van or whatever, they're going to be able to find those things if those are the things that you're really concerned about. What Dum Dum wants is he wants this big monolithic symbol of racism because he's pretty certain that's the only reason that he got elected. But now that he's done this, he's not going to be president forever. Well, I say that. Suppose he could make himself so. And when he's not, the tables kind of turn on this sort of thing. And you get a Democratic president. And now that the way that we've declared national emergencies has changed, we have some honest national emergencies that we've not decided to address in the past. One of them is this gun violence thing. That's the real thing. Democratic president could say, you know what? The school shootings are too much. We need to declare a national emergency. Here's what's automatically going to happen with guns. Here's what's automatically going to happen with magazine sizes. Here's what's automatically going to happen with ammunition itself. We could do that. Climate change. The fact that our home is effectively on fire right now, and we're looking around watching it be on fire, and we're saying, yeah, we're not going to do anything. Climate change, an honest national emergency, a planetary emergency. We're not the only people on this big blue ball. And that's what's going to happen now. Now, will a Democratic president decide to take those liberties? Remains to be seen. But now that the door has been kicked open, so that he could have his giant monolithic symbol of racism, There's no telling what the future holds. And why do they do this? I want you to understand something else about the NRA. The NRA is quickly becoming a 90-pound weakling. For a long time, they have owned the Republican Party. Now that the Democrats run the House, the Democrats are finally holding Democratic hearings on gun violence for the first time in like 8 or 9 years. The first hearings. Now remember, think of all the things that like Aurora happened, and of course Las Vegas happened, and Parkland. We just hit the 1 year anniversary of Parkland. Like the Pulse nightclub, all of these massive shootings have happened. Man, something like 500 people were wounded in Vegas. You know, like 60, 70, 80 of them died. They woke up that morning excited to go to their favorite country western concert, an outdoor concert on the Vegas Strip, and the next thing you know, they're dead or they're wounded. And that's the other thing with healthcare. I remember so many of those folks. So the guy that owned the gun decided to bust out the window in Vegas and kill as many people as his little heart desired. That's fine. Don't you dare try to take away his Second Amendment right, America. But the people on the Strip that got shot and killed, their funeral expenses. You know, that's a bill they didn't anticipate having right now, or their families didn't anticipate having. Well, what about those who got shot? I go to the emergency room with a little chest pain, you know, that goes away in a week. These guys have gigantic shrapnels of metal under their skin and intestines that are exploded that have to be replaced or put back together. I'm freaked out that there's going to be probably a $1,000 bill coming in the mail for my visit. And these guys have long-term care, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years. Because some guy whose rights are being protected by conservatives, because he was allowed to do, he was enabled in doing this. And these folks that got shot, yeah, they even when they had health insurance, it doesn't matter. They're likely not going to be covered all that well, because health insurance isn't there to help us. It's not there to cover us. It's not there to take care of us in our time of need. They're there to collect our premiums and then tell us to piss off when we try to use them. That's what they're there for. I'm freaked out about a $1,000 bill about to come in the mail. These guys had hundreds of thousands of dollars in bills coming in the mail. Well, the ones that didn't have insurance, you know, they're probably still easily in the tens for those who did have insurance. And if insurance isn't insuring you, then what the hell do we have it for? Why have the Republicans done this? Oh, they've long been in bed with the NRA.
Well, I think it's pretty straightforward. The Republican Party has really associated itself with the NRA. The NRA is a really important part of the coalition that leads to Republican success on Election Day. And the Republican Party, whereas it once was open to gun control laws, is now completely closed off to that possibility. So there's no new federal legislation because Republicans have controlled the Senate for many years now and without possibility of getting something through the Senate.
There's good news about the NRA. The NRA is broke, or almost broke, and they're starting to crumble. So a couple of things have happened. One, they decided to get mixed up with Russia. Putin and his oligarchs decided that they wanted the next U.S. president to be Donald J. Trump. So they get in touch with the NRA, and they say to the NRA, hey, we would like to have a Second Amendment right in Russia. And the NRA says, cool, you know, yeah, we'll help you out with that. You know, and they said, and we'll help you get Donald Trump elected. And so they get in bed with the Russians and Maria Butina and all this. And the truth is, Putin would never let it happen. Putin does not want private gun ownership in Russia. But the only thing that matters, the only thing that matters to the NRA is enabling, getting people as many murder weapons as possible. This woman that they had infiltrate the GOP and the NRA, Maria Butina, there are hundreds of photos of her, you know, with Rick Santorum or with Bobby Jindal, you know, all of these really high-ranking Republicans, because they really all bought into this idea. Well, now the NRA has been swept up in the Mueller investigation. Now they have to go to court and defend themselves. So they're losing money that way. The amount of people in the NRA, that number is shrinking as they watch the NRA after every shooting come out and defend the shooter. The other thing, NRA TV. NRA TV is crumbling. It's very boring. It's collapsing. Nobody's watching it. And of course, the other thing that's happening is, and it runs, very expensive to run a television station. That's why most people do radio. And the other thing that's happening, there's a Republican president now. The NRA can say as much as they want, he's coming to take your guns, but they gave more money to him than they've ever given to any candidate. Why? Russia. Because they were in bed with Russia at the time. The legislation that he has helped usher through, what little it is, and executive orders and all the rest, hasn't been, I think they gave him like $30 million. It's the most they've ever given to one candidate. It's like 25 or 30 million. And they have not gotten a return on that money. See, the way they pay, the way these companies lobby these congressmen is they say, we'll pay you this because we expect to get this in return through the legislation that you're going to write or pass through for us or whatever. And they paid him that amount of money. And their business hasn't gone up that much. So the good thing is the NRA is going away. The unfortunate news is they still wield a lot of power.
Well, the NRA is struggling. The NRA over the last year has seen its revenues decline significantly, as best as we can tell. Membership seems to be down. NRA TV seems to really be struggling. The NRA itself has been caught up in this Russia-Trump scandal in an embarrassing way. So the NRA is really having a tough year, no doubt. At the same time, though, we should remember that Donald Trump has given the NRA two Supreme Court justices who will be, for the next 30 years, very solid pro-gun votes on Second Amendment cases for many years to come.
And even though the NRA is not doing as well as they used to, they have gotten a lot of those Trump judges through. And for those of us that said, oh, how bad could things really be? Yeah, these judges are in there and they're going to effectively do whatever the NRA wants for a long time. And it doesn't matter what you want. You think the Republican Party defends murderers now? There were a lot of judges that were held up during the Obama years. And those judges have now got through because Donald Trump is president and Mitch McConnell has actually brought them up. Those are for life. McConnell is not. Trump is not. The judges, however, are. Not all the judge seats are filled, but quite a few of them are. And this is the time we need to realize you better get your ass out there and you better vote. You better take the Senate from these pricks, or the NRA will win again.
Welcome to the Democratic Party. We are not a rubber stamp for anybody. We are not a monolith. We never have been. And who would want to lead a party that would be described that way? The members come, they bring their enthusiasms, their priorities. We welcome that. And they're not programmed. They are spontaneous, prepared, and I'm proud of them.
So that was a press conference that was held recently from Nancy Pelosi, and they were asking Nancy Pelosi about the fact that Dum Dum had just issued a national emergency, declared a national emergency. They said, hey, he declared it. And so she's there answering a bunch of questions. And there's an interesting thing happening with the media right now. My local media is doing it. National media said, how far is the left going to go to the left? Okay, this is the stupid thing we're talking about right now. And so they ask her, hey, there's a bunch of hardcore leftists in your party. And they're trying to take the country off a cliff. you know, what about that? Because there's this kerfuffle about the Green New Deal right now, you know? And she goes, okay, my God, welcome to the Democratic Party. She gives her whole spiel. It's the media. The media needs this. They need cars to crash. They need buildings to fall. They need people to catch on fire. Much as we don't like, they need these things to happen. And I don't think that they're biased, you know, that they're trying to work for the Republicans. I don't think that's it at all. I just think they need the negativity. They need the disruption. They need the bad news. And the reason we have this thing in the media, news used to be done at a loss. Television stations, they'll make money on advertising. You know, they'll produce a show, they'll sell advertising for the show. That's where they'll make their money. And then they'll lose money on news. That way they can get good information to people. But when we started getting the 24-hour news channels, the 24-hour news cycle, well, they don't generally produce anything. They just do news all day. And the way they sell advertising, but the way they sell that advertising is by getting you there. Well, the news, if you tell it just as it is, you know, maybe you tell some good stories. Maybe things aren't that bad today. See, there's not a lot of people going to tune in for that. See, people tune into news when they feel like they need it. You got information and they need that information. So they're going to tune in. And I think so much of what the media does. Now, there's clear liberal outlets and there's clear conservative outlets. And they generally declare themselves as so. And Fox is about the only one that hasn't declared itself a conservative outlet, but it clearly is. But they try to say, well, MSNBC and CNN, and they're all liberal. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're simply not. They don't really care which one of these parties catches on fire. They just want to be there when it does. Because of that, we don't get good information. And so they're trying to turn the Democratic Party on its head right now before they get a chance to get back into power. And I don't think it's a partisan thing. I think it's a money-making thing. And that's unfortunate. 24-hour news is here now, and it's always going to be here. Fine. It's got a place in it, and it always will. But I just think a consideration needs to be made. Because one of the first rules of journalism is you're not supposed to become the story. You're not the story. You cover the story. And when they do things like this, they become part of the story. Because they'll say things in the media about this, that, or the other, and then people will start fighting. And it's just this thing that is being shared by the media because they need things to crash and catch on fire. But don't worry about it. I just want you to sort of understand how this stuff goes. I want to get into the taxes. Man, the taxes have been just bonkers. Okay. So we didn't go into shutdown part two. And so Trump, before the last shutdown, said, I'm going to own the dang gum shutdown. This is my shutdown. I'm proud to shut down the government. Shut down the government for 35 days. Put a lot of people, they missed their car payments and all this other stuff and so on and so forth. Couldn't get their medicine. And then while it was happening, he saw the pain and he goes, it's the dang gum Democrats just shutting down your government. And then when the government reopens, he says, I reopened the government, not the dang gum Democrats. And now, because he doesn't know when to shut the piss up, he finally goes, yeah, I shut down the government. But I did so because this is what I needed to do to get my damn thing through.
Could I have done it differently? No, not really. I mean, I think what by having the shutdown, we've set the table for where we are now. If I didn't do the shutdown, people wouldn't know. They wouldn't understand the subject.
So the media is still largely covering that. And, of course, the national emergency. What's not getting quite the attention that it should is the fact that the real world effects of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2007, or what I'm calling the Tax Theft Act of 2017, so we've got 2007, 2017, the real world effects are being felt by people right now who are filing for their tax returns. Quoting here, the headline, millions of Americans will probably be surprised by their tax refunds or bills. Quoting here from one person who did their taxes, that your tax plan screwed over my middle class family, one woman wrote to President Donald Trump. My $3,500 refund from last year is now $7. According to the IRS, the average refund is now down 8.4% compared to last year. This lady ends her tweet by saying, I'm a nurse and I work hard and you stole from me. I am laughing at this. We knew this was coming. We knew this was going to happen. We knew that it had absolutely nothing to do with us. So what did Trump say? Trump said that his tax cut would give more than somewhere between $4,000 and $9,000 back to middle-class people, back. And then, of course, at the same time, he dropped the corporate tax rate to 21% from 35%. And he said, it's okay. The way you're going to get your money is I cut taxes on these companies. They're just going to start paying you more money. And, of course, that never happened. And only 6% of the companies that got a tax cut, 6%, only 6% of them did anything to either raise wages or make their companies better. The rest of them just stuck it in their pockets, and then they joined him in Mar-a-Lago. And I'm hearing lots of these stories. So there was one woman from New York who got a $10,000 refund last year, but has a $10,000 tax bill this year. Okay, so what is going on with this? Did taxes really go up that much that people depend on their tax returns? I remember when we first became new parents, we certainly depended on our tax returns. Then when we started doing better, those tax returns started shrinking, and then we got to the point where you owe money to the government. We're fine because we're doing okay. But I remember depending on that the end of every year, you know, check for like a grand or $2,000 or $5,000 or whatever. Man, it was nice. You know, it was largely because we didn't make a lot of money. We're new parents. So if you got back $5,000 last year and you got $7 back this year, did your taxes go up that much? Or if you got back $10,000 last year and you owe $10,000 this year, did your taxes go up $20,000? No. A couple things happen here. So listen, I'll explain to you how this works. According to the Tax Policy Center, those in the bottom 20% of earners likely saw an average tax cut of about $60 per year. $60. The next 20% saw just a $380 total tax cut, while the top 0.1% of Americans got a tax cut of $190,000. Okay. So why are tax bills so much higher? If your tax cut was $60 for the year or $380 for the year, why are you owing thousands of dollars more? Here's why. The president said you're going to see right away in your paychecks these cuts that I made. Okay? It's not really the way it works, but okay, he said that. And so what he did, because the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did one thing. It cut taxes on super wealthy people. That's it. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He only cares about the super duper rich. But he had to make you and I feel like we were involved as well. Well, George W. Bush did this back in 2001. He cut taxes twice on the super duper rich. Those tax cuts weren't for us. It was only for the super duper rich. But we went, hey, and we cut them on rich people. He goes, okay. And so he sent everybody a $300 check. I got one of those checks. And then when he did the second tax cut for millionaires and billionaires, not as many people that time, but he sent out more of those $300 checks. But what happened with that was you ended up having to claim that at the end of the year. That became a part of that was something that you owed taxes on. So the way he was able to make it look like we got a tax cut was he directed the IRS as a part of this legislation, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. He directed the IRS to change all of the withholding tables. So what does that mean? That means that your bosses, based on those withholding tables, started taking out way less tax. And then Trump says, boom, I gave you a tax cut. No, you didn't. You just changed the withholding tables so that less money comes out. We still owe, you know, so if you're in the bottom 20%, you got a tax cut of $60 per year. And if you're in the next 20% tax bracket, it's $388 per year. That's it. But they changed the withholding to make it look like you got a tax cut. So Fox News is covering this. And only the way Fox News knows how to. The headline, many Americans are actually paying more in federal taxes thanks to the Trump tax cuts. The headline, Fox News tells Americans to stop complaining about their shrunken tax refunds. This is a real thing. On Fox and Friends the other day, now just think about this. If this were Obama, they would just be losing their minds, covering all the hard luck stories about people who got ripped off by that N-bomb. On Fox and Friends the other day, they actually said, hey, maybe y'all don't know how taxes work because they're a bunch of condescending pricks on Fox. And they said, you got a fatter paycheck all year. Maybe you should have spent that fatter paycheck a lot more wisely. You didn't get a fatter paycheck. Well, you did technically, I suppose, but it wasn't because you got more money. It's because the withholding tables changed. So there's any number of calculators online to tell you how to change your withholding tables, because no matter what happens with the Senate next year or the House or the presidency, we are with this tax law for the time being. So there's a whole lot of 2019 and 2020 tax calculators online that tell you what you should do to make sure that you pay the amount of tax you have to pay and you don't have this surprise at the end of next year. But it's really just a shell game, and y'all fell for it. Well, if you listen to the show, you likely didn't. But all the dum-dums out there that were expecting him to cut your taxes and build that wall, he's not really going to do this stuff. He's just going to say he did it. And hopefully, you'll just think that he did.
We're building the wall. A lot of it is, I mean, the chant now should be finish the wall as opposed to build the wall, because we're building a lot of wall. And I started this 6 months ago. We really started going to town because I could see we're getting nowhere with the Democrats. We're not going to get anywhere with them. It's going to be a part of their campaign, but I don't think it's good politically. And I think Nancy Pelosi should be ashamed of herself because she's hurting a lot of people. I think the Democrats should be ashamed of themselves.
So the wall has not been built. None of the wall has been built. The president has been owned by Nancy Pelosi. And after running on build that wall for all this time, for the last 4 years, he can't get it done. The world's greatest deal maker can't get this done. So is he going to find a way to build the wall? No, absolutely not. Instead, what he has decided to do at his rallies is change the chant from build that wall to finish that wall. No wall has been built. You know what? I'm just going to let Ali Velshi explain it to you.
That is the president of the United States lying again about a wall. Let me please just tell you what's actually going on, because he's been saying and tweeting for a few days about all this new wall that's being built. It's just an absolute provable lie. There are 1,954 miles of border between the United States and Mexico. Of that, 650 miles have a barrier of some sort. Okay, there is no new wall. There has been no new wall being built. 124 miles of that wall has been authorized to be replaced. Of the 124 miles, 40 miles have been replaced. 61 miles are in the process of being replaced. There will, as of February, there will be 14 new miles of wall. That's been authorized by Congress. But when the president says we're building walls, there's walls going up, there's new wall going up, I just need you all to understand, this is an absolute provable lie. If it were happening, it would be illegal because it's not actually authorized by Congress. And as much as Donald Trump thinks he can do whatever he wants to do, you can't actually build a wall between Mexico and the United States without appropriations from the Congress of the United States.
So, to recap, you did not get a tax cut. He simply had the withholding tables changed so it would look like you're getting a tax cut, but you did not get a tax cut. The wall is not being built. He has simply changed his chant from build the wall to finish the wall. Huh? You see the way this works now? This isn't meant to make you lose, you know, become cynical and lose faith in government. But this should motivate you, if it hasn't already, to get your ass involved.
The reason the unemployment extension hasn't passed is because our friends on the other side simply refuse to pass a bill that does not add to the debt. That's it.
What's reckless, Bob, is the $1.6 trillion deficit we're running this year.
He doubles the debt after his term in office and triples it by the end of his budget. He sends our debt on an upward trajectory that is completely unsustainable.
So debt, 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 debt. The Republicans hate debt. They say so all the time. Well, they say when a Democrat is in charge. God, they hate debt so much. But now that a Republican is in charge, they're not all that concerned with debt. By God, they just love debt. And as a matter of fact, they love debt so much, it's not enough to put the country in debt. Boy, oh, would they love for you, yes, you personally, to be in debt and in debt to them. The headline here, you're probably not getting that loan forgiveness that you're counting on. So in 2007... President George W. Bush signed a program into law, quoting here, that was intended to encourage Americans to go into public service. My wife did this. The idea was that if you worked at a civic-minded job and made a 120, so it's 12, it's 10 years, 10 years of on-time payments, the rest of your debt would be wiped. In 2013, the recently formed Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, estimated that up to a quarter of the American workforce could qualify for some sort of loan forgiveness. And while the first group of borrowers were technically eligible for forgiveness under the 2007 law, last year CNBC reports that the program so far looks like something between a bureaucratic crap show, I'm not going to say that word, and an abysmal failure. Of the 30,000 people who have made 120 on-time loan payments and got a civic-minded job and applied for loan forgiveness, only 96 people out of 30,000 have had their debt erased. And it gets better. The headline, a GOP proposal could snatch your student loan payments right from your paycheck. This is being referred to as mandatory wage garnishment. This from Annie Nova over at CNBC.com. Student loan borrowers would have their monthly bills automatically deducted from their paychecks if a Republican-backed, I don't know why y'all keep voting for these people, a Republican-backed proposal becomes law. Senator Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee, chairman of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, laid out the details of the massive overhaul to the student loan system. In a speech this month, the changes could affect some 40 million people. Average debt at graduation is somewhere between $30,000 up from $10,000 in the 1990s. The country's outstanding loan balance is projected to swell to $2 trillion. That's debt, guys. They don't care about debt right now.
They are in denial. They're in denial about the debt, $14.3 trillion. They're in denial about the deficit.
They didn't want to see a nation in debt. They wanted us to pay our bills in our time.
Yes, this level of debt is unsustainable, but it is also immoral.
Remember that when they used to get fired up about how much they hated the debt? Well, the student loan debt is supposed to be $2 trillion by 2022. Under Alexander's proposal, there would be just two repayment routes, one of which borrowers' monthly bills are capped at 10% of their discretionary income, and another that spreads their payments out over a decade. Employers would be responsible for taking the funds from their employees' paychecks and sending them to the government. And the guy who drew it up said, hey, we're just trying to make things easier on folks with this automatic payment. They don't have to think about making their student loan payments anymore. We'll just yank it directly out of their paychecks. Yeah, I understand you got other bills, cars, healthcare, which we're also trying to screw you on, mortgage, children, so on and so forth, food. Maybe you don't really need food. But we are going to make things easier on you by taking your student loan payments directly out of your paycheck. So what's really happening here? Peep this. The people that give out these student loans, that make monster amounts of money, or the servicers on these student loans, have realized what's happening. There's a whole lot of people with student loans in default right now. They took out more than they could afford to pay back. They weren't able to gain employment after college, and they owe a lot of money. So this is a debt bomb. This is a real live debt bomb. And what these servicers have said is, F, we're not going to get anything. We got to do something. And what they've decided to do is to just yank the money out of your paychecks so they can get as much as they can before this debt bomb explodes. And what the Republicans have decided to do is they are going to help these guys rob you. Now, I know I'm using a lot of titles here, you know, labels, Democrat, Republican. So tell me this. Don't tell me if you are a Democrat or a Republican. Just tell me if you think that this is okay. Is it okay that the president lied to us about a tax cut when he didn't really give us a tax cut? He just gave all of his rich white friends a tax cut and just changed the withholding tables. Is that okay? Don't tell me your party. Just tell me if that's okay. Is it okay that the president is now lying about his signature campaign promise about building? Well, I didn't want this effing thing built, but people believe it's being built, even though not one brick has been laid down for his new stupid wall. He just simply changed his chant to finish the wall. Don't tell me your party. Just tell me if that kind of thing is okay. Another thing, and I know these things are bipartisan, because it's not just a bunch of Democrats taking out loans for school. It's a lot of everybody's. So this affects everybody. Is it okay that they set up this system that puts you in debt, that puts you in debtor's prison, you know, and oversold and overpromised and told you how much money you're going to be making and just encourage you to take out as much money as possible? Which then, of course, with the colleges knowing that, they just continue to raise and raise and raise and raise and raise and raise tuition. And then you had to borrow more and more and more and more. Don't tell me your party. I don't care. Just tell me if you think this kind of thing is okay. And now that we've got all these people, something like 1 out of 5 people in default on their debts, and the people that service these debts who are buying planes and second, third, fourth mansions off of all of this, now that they are realizing that this gravy train may be coming to an end because everybody might just stop paying their loans altogether. And so they've decided they're going to start garnishing your wages, and they don't care how much money they leave you with. Don't tell me your party affiliation. Tell me if you think that this is okay.
Nations and donors push for open borders while living their lives behind walls and gates and guards. Meanwhile, working class Americans are left to pay the price for mass illegal immigration, reduced jobs, lower wages, overburdened schools, hospitals that are so crowded you can't get in, increased crime, and a depleted social safety net. Tolerance for illegal immigration is not compassionate. It is actually very cruel.
Boy, he sounds like he really cares, doesn't he? The old millionaire president. God, he really cares about you. There's a proposal that's being put forward right now. The headline, 2 millionaire senators plan to introduce a bill that makes sure that Congress is only for rich people. There's a thing happening right now, and you can be happy about this. I'm happy about this, and that is that regular folks like you and I are realizing not just that the deck is stacked against us, but realizing that we ourselves can run for the House and for the Senate, and dagnabbit, we can make change. And a lot of those people got in the House this year. And a lot of those people, there's more Republican seats up next year in the Senate than there are Democratic seats. And my God, that could flip the Senate. And who knows, maybe a regular guy could become president? Someone who really cares about people's needs? Republican senators realize that. And so 2 millionaire senators, quoting here, this is from Ian Millhiser over at Think Progress. Let's start this column off with a bold assertion. Paying lawmakers good salaries is one of our country's most important progressive reforms because it means that they don't have to be wealthy to serve. High congressional pay is a safeguard against corruption, not a sign of it. You got that? Bear this assertion in mind when you consider this proposal. So, Rick Scott says, this morning, I co-sponsored a bill to end congressional pensions with Senator Braun. Americans shouldn't have to fit the bill for generous salaries and pensions for members of Congress. And I'm proud to be working on the common sense solutions to make D.C. work. Okay, Senator Braun, Scott's worth is about 200. This is from Scott from Florida. Rick Scott. His worth is about $232.6 million. Okay, that was at the end of 2017. And Senator Mike Braun from Indiana is worth somewhere between $35 and $96 million. Okay, so they can absolutely afford to not worry about this pension, you know, or even congressional pay. So if they get rid of this, regular people get into that job, it's going to be really hard for them to really integrate back into society. Now, if they become a House or a Senate member, they could certainly become a lobbyist. We don't want that. But the fact that they have high pay and they have a pension afterwards is one of the things that more or less sort of helps keep them honest. But if you're in Congress and you don't need to pay, Rick Scott doesn't need to pay. Rick Scott doesn't, and Senator Braun don't need to pay. But what they're doing is they're trying to set up a system where only rich guys can run for Congress. It's very expensive to live in D.C. It's very expensive to stay in D.C., especially post your job or your time in the House or the Senate. You know, if you aren't making enough money, I don't mind that these folks make this pension. I don't mind that they make the pay that they make. Hell, I think that they should make more. Maybe they'd be less likely to talk to lobbyists. But realizing that you and I are a threat, you and I could run for the House. You and I could run for the Senate and win. Has them running scared. And so they're trying to change the rules to make sure that we don't have a chance to get into the people's House or the people's Senate. We need to reject this, and we need to recognize it for what it is, little more than a power grab by the Republicans. Don't tell me your freaking party. Just tell me if you think that this kind of thing is okay. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Just tell me if you think that this kind of thing is okay. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard not only to inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with you. I want to thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, go run for government. Good morning.